law school, baby. It all starts here.
Caleb Parsons is 6'9 swingman. You can shoot the three.
This is why you don't teach lessons.
Exactly.
You have basketball fans that are terrible and shameful. Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, March 16th, 2009. I am Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports. And with me today are...
Evan Drexler, sports editor and football beat writer.
Kyle Maestri, baseball beat writer.
And IT writer, Mike.
Phil Kegler, columnist and back from extended vacation.
Yeah, we're all back from a little vacation here at spring break. I'm back from my hometown of Steinhatchee, Florida, which I'm sure all of our listeners also made their spring break trip to.
It's got to be as awesome as it sounds.
Oh, it is. Just believe me on that.
Just Google it.
Just under, like, Daytona and Pensacola for
Panama,
locations.
Yeah, I say Panama City Beach and then Steinhatchee. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, now that I've, you know, spoken poorly about myself enough, let's get to the topics here. Deifer, tell us about the basketball team, what they did over spring break.
Phil and I just got back from Tampa, the St. Pete Times Forum, where the
wonderful place to see basketball.
It was a good venue. It was. Florida bows out of the SEC tournament in a quarterfinal loss to Auburn, all but dashing their hopes of an NCAA tournament bid. They were left out of the field of 65 today, which is Sunday, and they're first, number one seed in the NIT now. So they play Jacksonville on Wednesday. So it's a tough weekend for the Gators.
All right, let's talk about the SEC tournament and the loss and everything that, you know, where the wheels kind of came off. Phil, you were there. We've talked a lot about Calathes leading up till now. He sort of disappeared. I think you wrote a column about that online. Tell me about Calathes.
Yeah, once again, Nick Calathes continued his flame out down the stretch here. Again, two subpar games. Not as involved offensively as Calathes needs to be. He needs to score more points. You know, it's easy to say some nights you need to be a distributor. And Thursday night, yeah, Walter Hodge and Dan Werner played great, you know, contributed a lot of scoring, so that's great. But, you know, Friday night, down the stretch, could have used a great night from Calathes. He's nowhere to be found. He shoots some ridiculously bad shooting percentage. And, you know, whatever. He says nothing's different about him. So I guess he just isn't that good.
Yeah, Phil, you made the point to me the other day that this is the first time in this all season, the last couple of games, where the rest of the team actually has played really well. And if Calathes would have matched their play, they could have won these games. They probably could have gotten the tournament.
Yeah, that was the big point of mine. It's like the whole season it was Calathes and everyone else, and then everyone else decided to, like, remember how to be a really good basketball player, and Calathes, like, forgot to join them along the ride.
All right, I mean, give you 10 seconds to back down off of what you just said. Everybody else remembered to be really good basketball players? Well, who was really good basketball players in that game?
They wasted
nine.
A great tournament performance from Dan Werner.
Dan Werner fought. Walter 15
Hodge,
to 13
like, for Dan
remembered
Werner.
How to be, like, right, a
yeah.
good
well,
integral
let,
part
let
of the
Hodge got to the rim?
I got something to say about Dan Werner here. For the first time ever, I thought Dan Werner should have shot the ball more in the opening section of the Auburn game because he drilled two threes, the best you can possibly hit him. It was like perfect arc, perfect rotation, nothing but the middle of the net, swishes, like looked like he knew what he was doing. And they didn't go back to him as a hot hand. I thought he should have taken a couple more shots early. That being said, after then, he went ice cold. Didn't he finish like 3 of 10 or something like that? So he completely tailed off. It's not like Dan Werner was like, you know, putting the team on his back, scoring 20 points, unstoppable.
But Dan Werner was their best player this week. And I think by far.
That's an indictment on the other players.
Even though he didn't score as much in the second game, he still played really well. He rebounded well. A lot of offensive rebounds for Dan Werner for the first time.
He fought on both ends. He was a real worker. Okay. He took his work pail and he went to lunch.
So Dan Werner being the team's best player, I won't even say whether or not I agree with that. It's inconsequential. Do you think that's because the other players on the team that are normally better than him dropped their play? Or because
absolutely.
Dan Werner elevated to this amazing status of play?
I kind of agree that he did elevate his play. I think the other players didn't play well, but Dan Werner played the best basketball he's played all year.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I agree he's played the best he's played.
3 of 10 the best he's played all year. Or was it 3 of 10, 3 of 11, 4 of 11? Whatever it was. There's something very close. That's
I mean, played Thursday night.
Okay, but you're looking just at
numbers.
Yes, agreed. But that was against Arkansas also. I mean,
Nick Calathes was showing up.
I mean, Alex Tyus had a decent game against Auburn, right?
20 and 10? 21.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, see, they wasted that too. Alex Hines goes for 21 points, and he gets no help other than Dan Werner's.
The other problem I had is down the stretch, you have Alex Hines who scored 21 points, and down the stretch they go to him like twice, and yeah, he doesn't connect. because he's not a great postman like when you just throw it into him, but you got to touch the ball more often to Mr. Tice.
And Phil, what do we say about college basketball?
You got to pound it into the big man.
Well, it's funny that you say he didn't get the ball down the stretch because nobody could dislodge the ball from Urban Walker's little hands because he was just walking it down and launching it. I mean, he became...
Someone had to.
No, but...
Well, somebody, I mean, Calathe's doing it in the final part of the game.
Nothing, but hiding. Urban Walker... You guys really don't think Urban Walker took questionable shots down the stretch of that game.
I think
I saw it live and I didn't have that thought.
I agree with Phil. I think he missed some shots, but I don't think they were bad shots.
You weren't surprised with how many shots he took down the stretch, though.
I think he's one of the few people like that has the chutzpah to take those shots.
Chutzpah. Phil, pronounce it like a Jew. Chutzpah. Chutzpah.
I think he has confidence in himself. And Billy Donovan has the confidence in him to take those shots.
Urban Walker is their best shooter. He's by far their best shooter.
No, I disagree. I think Walter Hodges is their best shooter.
He's really?
And yeah, I think Calathe is a pretty good shooter when he actually decides to play.
We can check the percent. Yeah, Calathe shoots better percentages than him, too. Yeah. Why would you say Herb's their best? Because he's got the most range, probably, on the team.
Nick Calathe has disappeared the last 5 games.
What does that have to do with the last 5 games?
Okay, listen.
We'll come back to that.
So, Nick Calathe, in crunch time, I know you talked about the last 5 minutes of the game stuff. But Calathe wasn't taking those shots. He was giving the ball up. Dan Warner wasn't taking those shots. Hodge got to the basket, made some shots. But other than that,
Hodge
Urban Walker's the only one.
Actually, there. Calathe drove and kicked it back out to him to like keep them close in the last 2 minutes,
right.
I think it was.
I agree that Calathe was very passive in crunch time. But Walker he failed in crunch time. Like, why can't we say Urban Walker did not succeed in crunch time? He missed shot after shot, and he probably shouldn't have been taking the shots.
Urban Walker missed the shots. But I'm not going to blame him for shooting. Someone has to take those shots, and he was willing. He had the courage to take those shots, and other people wouldn't.
He takes too many bad shots. There was a shot, and I think you'll agree with this one, because I texted you in the middle of the game. I'm pretty sure you agree with me. He took a shot from, like, 7 feet beyond the three-point line, fairly contested. I'm not going to say there was a guy right in his face, but a guy closed out on him. It wasn't wide open. And there were 16 seconds left on the shot clock from the top of the key. That's a horrible shot. He can't take shots like that. Somebody has to rein him in.
That was a bad shot. But at the end of the game, when it came down to it, Urban Walker is a good three-point shooter, and he's made
late
threes.
Let's get to the stats. Let's get to the stats. We haven't said the stats on air, so let's go to this.
Go ahead.
And he subbed in at the 5-minute, 10-second mark in the Auburn game. He went 0-for-3 from 3 from that point on, and 1-for-1 from inside the 3-point line. He was 1-for-4 with 2 points down the stretch. They scored 10 as a team, as Evan asked me before. Also, in the Mississippi State game, because I went back and checked those stats, in the last 5-minute period, he was 0-of-2 from 3-point range, and he was 1-of-3 otherwise. So he was 1-of-5 total with 2 points. Now, against Tennessee, he got hot, and he tried to bring him back, did the best he could. But for the second time in these last couple games that they've lost here, he gets a shot blocked at the end of the game, down 3 points with a clean 3-point look to tie it.
All right. I mean, it sounds like to me that you're blaming the entire loss on Irv.
No.
He's like attacking him mercilessly. Did you see the tears coming from his eyes after the game?
I should let up on him because he cried.
Give him a break.
Well, first of all,
don't say anything bad about him
because
he cried.
Don't blame the guy for crying.
No, I don't blame him for crying at all.
He cares.
Adam Morrison, he's lend a shoulder
Adam for him. Adam Morrison. All right, okay. You were with me in Auburn earlier this year when Irving Walker hit two enormous threes that won them that game. So they're playing Auburn again. They're down. What makes you think he can't hit that shot again? At least hit the shot.
The two threes were enormous, but just like I'm not saying he lost the game because he played poorly down the stretch. I'm just saying he played poorly down the stretch. We can't say that he won the game because he hit those two shots. It wasn't like a buzzer beater where he clearly won the game. He hit two big shots that swung momentum and definitely helped them win, but I think he helped them lose in this game. He wasn't the reason that they lost. They lost as a team, but he didn't help them win. I'm sorry.
Don't forget that final play. Nick Calathe just passed up a wide open shot at the top of the key to pass the ball to Walker.
It was not wide open.
It was
not wide open.
Not
at all.
A 6'6 guy who can shoot the three, he needs to take that shot. He's like Chandler Parsons.
Yeah,
first
of all, Chandler Parsons.
I was
like,
say,
paging Chandler Parsons.
Yeah, he just
I can't justify my earlier comments about Chandler Parsons.
I feel like Parsons scored like 2, 5, or 6, and then nothing in the last game.
Like,
what happened?
And
I mean,
fouls.
He didn't...
What do you have, like 0 points and 3 fouls?
At one point in the second game, he had 0 points and 3 fouls and went to the bench.
Dan Warner stat.
The most impressive stat of the weekend is Dan Warner had like 2 fouls the entire tournament. Great. In the first game, he had no fouls. So
That's not necessarily a great thing, but
for
it's good that he wasn't
like
foul
him.
Well, Dan Warner usually fouls out.
Usually
close.
It's good that he didn't foul out. But I just think, Urban Walker, one of the notes I wrote to myself while I was keeping this, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I think you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I wrote, Urban Walker is dynamic, that's for sure, but sometimes it's almost in a bad way. Like, he tries to create a play, and I think sometimes he just does too much. And Urban Walker cannot be their crunch time player the way that he's been playing. It needs to be somebody else. It should have been Calathes. And if that comes down to Billy Donovan in the huddle saying, Nick, you take this shot. Let's get this shot for Nick. Let's get this shot for Walt or whoever else. Let's get this shot for Tyus. It needs to come down to that, and they need to go ahead and execute that. It can't be Irv also, you know, in the Georgia game where he takes it down, doesn't call a timeout, doesn't give up the ball, and forces a shot that was poor at the end of the Georgia game. Urban Walker has shown that he wants it, but has he shown that he deserves it down the stretch?
All right, well, he hasn't played great all the time in that situation, but I'm not going to fault him for wanting to take that shot and for having – he is a dynamic player, and he shouldn't – it's better for him to shoot too much than not be willing to take that shot.
I don't know about that.
And, I'm going to say I think that in Billy Donovan's mind on Friday night that Irving Walker was the second man on his list to take that shot. Calathes, I would say, is first. Maybe third behind Hodge, but I would say in Donovan's mind, in the huddle, he called that timeout. I bet it was like 2 and 2A. And the other thing that I will point out is Irving Walker's two-pointer that he made, which, you know, in a stat line can seem very not meaningful, was actually a really big shot. Cut down the lead back to one possession. He drove in the lane, hit a big floater. It was a pretty big shot.
I was going to say, he showed that potential, you know, that slashing knee that we've talked about all season here, like that guy who's willing to get in the lane, he showed that a little bit. So, I mean, you can argue, you know, he became the player they needed a little bit,
well,
just not in crunch time.
What was the joke that you made to all of us? Go ahead and tell him, because it's a good joke and it applied.
That I'm calling him Pargo?
Right.
All
right,
in honor of Gennaro Pargo, the Hornets guard who inexplicably took more crunch time shots than Chris Paul in the NBA playoffs last semester.
It was the same thing. It was the same type of scenario.
Here's what I'll say about Walker, though. I think he's the only one on this Florida team who is the kind of player Billy Donovan is trying to mold. He's the only one that's got, like, the courage and the chutzpah, Phil's going to say.
Chutzpah.
He wants it. Is it bad? He's the only one on that team that shows any kind of desire?
I hope they walk it back from scouting a guy like, hey, what'd you think of this guy we scouted? He's got the chutzpah, man. Like, when did this become a measure of a player? Like, come on, guys.
You said the word pretty well there. I'm impressed.
Thanks,
with that.
I am in fact Jewish.
going back to the Pargo reference there, my problem with that is, I don't think Walker, like, takes those shots from Calathes.
Yeah,
it's not like he's, like, taking the ball and, like, not giving it to Nick. If Nick is willing to take those shots, then Walker isn't going to take it.
Yeah, that's not the argument I'm making. I'm like, Chris Paul maybe wasn't willing to take the shots, or David West, or whoever
on
that team.
To me, that's almost as much on Calathes as it is on Walker, then. Calathes has to step up. He's the man on the team. You're struggling, that's fine. You create, you try to go to the hoop. You can't just give up at the end of the game.
And I want to go back to Calathes for a minute. You and I both saw this during one of the like stretches during the Auburn game. He missed a shot or something. He like mouths under his breath like, "How am I playing this battery?" He was explicit.
There's definite curse words.
But he couldn't have looked any more frustrated all weekend. Like sitting in the locker room after the game, he is like, he couldn't believe he's playing this bad. So,
but my point is, if you're a good player, and especially if you're your team's go-to player, you have to let all that go. If it's the end of the game and your team needs a three-pointer, your team needs a bucket, you can't be worried about, oh, I'm playing really not well. I'm not playing, you know, great. You got to just man up and either drive to the hole if your shot's not working, try to get fouled, try to get to the rim. You can't do something and just be like, oh, everybody else will figure it out. I'll just pass the ball.
So what turned off? Like, why did he stop becoming the guy for the team in the tournament?
I also think, let's get back. Let's do a little reasoning here. Do we think Nick Calathes was wide open behind the line or wide open drives to the hoop where he was just, like, clearly deferring where he pump faked Dan Werner style and then gave the ball up? No. Calathes obviously commands the most attention from the defense on this team, and I don't think he's a selfish player by nature. And I think when he's down the stretch and they're putting the best defender on him and they're going to double team him off the pick and roll, he's going to give the ball up because he wants somebody to get an open look. Like at the end of the Tennessee game and at the end of this Auburn game, Urban Walker had wide open looks. So obviously they went to the right guy on those plays. But I don't think Calathes is just so timid down the stretch. You guys make it seem like he's just cowering like in the corner of the court while like he's asking other teammates to save him. Like that's not at all his mentality. He runs the offense the same as he runs the offense any other time. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe he needs to be more aggressive. But it's not because I don't think he's afraid. I think he's just doing what he would normally do.
You think he needs to develop some kind of a killer instinct?
Yeah, sure. I'll roll with something like that.
Well, yeah, I don't think he has that, though. I don't think he has any kind of...
He definitely doesn't have it now.
And I think he needs to be more selfish at the end of the game. I know he's like a good teammate to Furge or whatever, but in that situation, he needs to take that shot.
Okay, I agree with that.
But you're telling me if Nick Lathis is playing well for the first 35 minutes, he still would have played like those last 5 minutes differently?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so to reel this thing back in, let's go forward here. They're going to the NIT. Does anybody care?
One quick note on the SEC tournament.
All right.
The only thing worse than UF's play this tournament was Raycon's coverage.
I didn't have the privilege of being in Tampa, so I watched
it on TV. When they played Arkansas, they had Arkansas's record is something like 2-14, 1-9. Like the math didn't even add up, and it was so ridiculous. So that's like, all right, maybe that's the graphics people.
Typos are
huge. Yeah, maybe that's the graphics people. So then the next night, UF's record comes up as, you know, whatever their overall record, and then 7-9 in SEC play. All right, maybe that's the graphics people again. Then the announcer says, knowing he should know the implications of the game, where UF stands in the postseason picture, he's like UF 7-9 in the SEC coming into this game. Unbelievable! How do you butcher that in a big game?
First of all, these announcers, to be fair to them, are covering like 12 games in a 4-day period and have just sheets of paper and sheets of paper they're gonna, you know, ruffle through.
Also, it was Dan Warner all night long.
Well, we had Chris Richards or whatever. Oh, yeah. Richard and Cliff Richard in the NCAA tournament in 07. So,
unbelievable Raycon. Just terrible. I couldn't have been any more displeased with the Raycon coverage.
Luckily, thanks to ESPN's new deal with the SEC, this is probably the last we're ever going to see a Raycon. Yeah, rest in peace, Raycon.
Maybe when ESPN comes, we'll get basketball as good at the SEC as it is in the Big East. We can hope. We can pray.
All right, so now that we've lost Raycon as a sponsor.
Scratch Raycon off the possible sponsor list.
Right, if you're interested in sponsoring the Alligator Sports Podcast, please contact sports@alligator.org.
Spoken like a true sports editor. All right, let's talk about going forward in the NIT, though. They're playing Jacksonville, I think, to start off at home. They play a couple of home games. What are their chances going forward here?
I mean, they're
going
to destroy Jacksonville. And they,
tell us how you really
know. Then they get the winner of Providence, Miami, which could be an intriguing game, especially for if Miami. Well, especially if Miami gets through, because Miami's got some good players. Jack McClain's a good player, mm-hmm. But really, Florida's got a pretty easy road to the Madison Square Garden and the NIT, like, Final Four. Don't be surprised if the Gators get to the Garden.
You don't think Penn State's going to put up a fight?
Penn State and George Mason are also in the bracket. You can see them in the third round.
Patriots.
What if Florida loses their first round game?
What? To Jacksonville?
I honestly could see it happening. It's impossible.
They could lose to Miami or Providence easily. But I don't think they'll lose to Jacksonville.
They could easily lose to Miami or Providence. It wouldn't even be that bad of a loss, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But there's no way they lose to Jacksonville. No way. You guys are being a little over the top here.
I'm not saying it's fact. I was just saying, I don't, like, you think it's by far, like, you'd set the line at what?
Whatever you want.
20?
Yeah.
Okay.
You think it's going to be that big? I mean, I can't. Yeah. You can't count something like this out. I mean, did you see? Did you
see? I mean, you're saying Nick Kalathis comes up, shoots like 3-14 again.
Okay, here's how this
isn't playing
if
well.
If Nick
Kalathis
and Alex Tyus are injured to the point where they can't return to the game in the first 5 minutes, they could possibly lose to Jacksonville. But I'd like to think that the walk-ons would come in and beat the crap out of the Jacksonville starters. Kyle McClanahan just goes off, you know. It's not even close. Hudson Fricke, he's back from injury, right?
He has been in layup line. So.
See, he's ready to go.
Corey Brewer did have a triple-double against Jacksonville a couple years ago.
Oh, that's right.
So,
they played Jacksonville, like, a bunch of years.
They played them last year.
They need to burn Adam Allen's red shirt, you know, whatever.
No chance. It was a Jacksonville.
All right, but then they will play the winner of Providence, Miami. I mean, they do have a shot to get back to the Final Four here, right?
The NIT Final Four.
Well, clearly I wasn't talking about the NCAA Final Four.
I mean, they have a good shot. They're in the easiest bracket, the home games, first three rounds. I think it's very possible they can make it back. I mean, they lost last year in the semifinal to UMass.
I agree that they have an easy route if they get past the Miami-Providence winner. I think that's their only real challenge before the Final Four. As much as I like George Mason, their best player is out with injury and has been for almost the whole season, so they're not going to do it. Penn State, I think it's a big
thing. How many points did Penn State score against Illinois?
I have no idea. Is that 38? And they only lost by a handful.
They play they play great defense in the Big Ten.
Oh, yeah.
Prediction on the record, Florida loses to Miami second round.
All right. You think Miami needs Providence?
Yeah. Although, I do feel bad about that.
Still didn't think about that.
Florida's
the
better.
Call that game.
I mean, Miami's the better seed, but they have to play at Providence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Here's my question, though. Does this team come out fired up for the NIT? Do they care?
Are the fans fired up? Last year, Donovan takes them out of the practice facility, lose all their Florida gear, all that stuff. It's a big motivational rally cry. We're not going to miss out on the tournament next year. They're back. They missed out on the tournament. You obviously can't go through all of that again.
Just take away scholarships.
I don't know how you motivate a team at this point. I think you try to save a little pride and not lose in your home court. I mean,
was anyone at those games last year?
I went to the Creighton game.
How was the fan support for that week?
Rough.
Yeah.
Not ideal.
We talk about how bad Florida basketball fans are now. No one's coming
just
to the NIT.
I mean, if we're going on a scale of like 0 to 10, with 0 being Vanderbilt football and 10 being Puerto Rican fan support in Miami for the World Baseball Classic, I'm putting it at about a 4. So,
what a great scale.
Vanderbilt football was pretty weak. It was a lot of UF fans at that game this year.
It's cold, man.
It was
cold. People love going to Vanderbilt for the football. So they're for the schooling.
The great live music.
Great live music, absolutely. The great city of
Nashville. What's his name was in town that weekend, so nobody showed up. So some like has been musical artist was playing.
I didn't catch up on
it. I can't remember. We talked about it earlier. I can't remember who it was. It was mentioned in somebody's story.
Yeah, I don't remember. But that clearly took the fanship away from poor Vanderbilt.
Okay, moving on. All
right. I actually think that about wraps it up for our basketball talk here. We're going to talk a little bit about the UF baseball team right now. Kyle, talk to me about what the team did over the break here.
Okay, they played two series over the break. The first was a 3-game set with Duquesne, who came into the series winless. And the second was a 3-game set with Arkansas. So the first series against Duquesne was the first weekend we left for spring break, starting on that Friday. And they swept the Dukes. They scored a ton of runs in all the games and, you know, wasn't even close competitively. But in Friday night's game was where the real news comes in. Josh Adams hit a 5th-inning home run off of Duquesne pitcher Gary Pierpont. And
you sound confident with that name.
it's hard. Pierpont. Pierpont, we all agree.
I'm good with that.
Okay. Pierpont. Yeah. All right. Anywho, Gary took exception to Josh Adams' reaction to the home run. He felt he stayed in the box too long. He stared it down, whatever it was. So he started kind of jawing at him while he was rounding the bases. Josh Adams probably jawed back a little bit. I wasn't there. I don't know for sure. Next batter was Matt Dendecker, and Gary took the liberty of throwing a ball over his head. Matt Dendecker, not a big fan of that move, charged out to the mound. Words were exchanged and, you know, probably a little bit more. That led to a full-on bench-clearing brawl. Both teams out onto the field, punches were thrown. Pretty serious stuff as far as that's concerned. Penalties were handed out. Ben McMahon, backup catcher, Josh Adams, and Matt Dendecker all received 3-game suspensions. Riley Cooper did not receive a suspension, but he was benched the next game by O'Sullivan, probably as a disciplinary move there. That's without confirmation, but I'm going to go ahead and I'll go out on a limb on that with all my journalistic integrity, for what it's worth. Like I said, I wasn't there. I heard it was quite a spectacle, though, and that's the Duquesne news.
Bullpen's cleared and everything.
Yeah, bullpen's cleared. Everybody was out there. It was really, I found the news pretty shocking. I just don't think of college baseball as an environment where stuff like that really happens. I don't know. How about you guys?
I mean, this is almost the second time that's happened this season, if you count the Riley Cooper.
Yeah, the Miami thing was very mild, though. That stuff can happen in Southwest, you know? Like, it was just like, guy slides hard into second, somebody takes exception, it's a push and a push back, and then a little bit of jawing. You know, that kind of stuff happens in competitive sports anywhere when you're 12 years old. But, like, this one is just a bench-clearing brawl. Do we feel different about – in the pros, I don't have a problem with it. It's kind of how baseball works. In college, they need to be held to a higher standard where they can't do things like this? I don't know.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Fighting in baseball, always a good thing. Always fun, always cool. I mean, I have no problem with this. How is this any different than any other kind of altercation you're going to have on like a football field in college or something like that?
I covered this team all last year, and I can't remember a time when it ever got to a point of a bench clearing brawl. I mean, there's always going to be talking back and forth, but it was never anything like this. So there must have been some, I mean, something serious for these guys. But as far as fighting in college baseball, I'm going to side with Kyle on this one. There's no reason for them to be going out and beating each other up. I mean, in the college game where the Duquesne has to go travel home the next week and go back to their college friends and like get the black eye. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, here's the mistake here. Gary really messed this up. I'm not going to attempt his last name.
Pierpont.
I'm just going to
refer to Gary Pierpont.
Pierpont.
I'm Gary Michael
Gary.
Pierpont.
Gary P. Gary P. really messed this thing up because we got on here a couple weeks ago and we talked about the baseball code of ethics. He didn't follow it here, okay? You got to wait for Josh Adams to come back up. It doesn't matter if you're still in the game. Teammates got your back, whatever. Just put one in his back and be done with it. Like, that's how baseball works. And then it's on Josh Adams from there. It's on Josh Adams to escalate it or not from there. But the points have been made. Gary didn't like it. What are you going to do about it? All right? So that's how baseball should work. It shouldn't be whoever steps in the box next gets a pitch thrown over their head. I also don't like that the pitch was thrown over his head. I don't know
dangerous.
How high it was over his head, but if it was close, you don't want to go head hunting, really, to make a point. That's not cool. But I just feel like the code was not strictly followed, which I have a problem with. Had it been strictly followed and a brawl ensued, I wouldn't have a problem with it necessarily.
See, Mike McCall would have argued he just should have waited and struck him out.
They should have had everyone lay down on the field, and Gary should have just mowed down Dendecker on three pitches.
I love that theory.
Yeah,
just a quick shout out to Ben McMahon for standing up. I went to high school with Ben
McMahon.
Vision Moore.
Making a name for himself.
Making a name for himself.
Can.
Don't take any crap, Ben. Way to go.
Way to go.
Way
for
to
getting
go.
Into a fight.
Yeah, and I think college athletes, you're representing a school, you're on scholarship, you're held to a certain
standard. You're
held
brush that away.
You're held to a certain standard, whether or not you want to believe that, Mike DeFernando.
Have you seen some of the things that takes place on college football fields? Like, come on.
What?
How is this any different?
This is
because
what are you talking
about? Major League Baseball players have, you know, if they want to go get and punch each other out, that's fine because they're making $1 million a season. And they can do whatever they
and
want.
They're
going to
get their ass fined.
But yeah, and they're going to lose their money, and it's their money. They do what they want with it. But college baseball players, it's a whole different situation that they're not. You know, they're losing playing time to impress Major League Baseball.
And you're not
going to
have fines dished out.
Yeah, you don't need
college baseball players.
Hey, you have a bunch of 18 to 22-year-old kids who are playing in competitive sport and are athletes. Like
testosterone's high.
Man, this kind of stuff happens. This happens to all. If we go to Southwest and play a pickup game in basketball, this kind of stuff happens.
No, this does not happen. Maybe there's like a one-on-one altercation that almost comes to blows or comes to blows for a second then is broken up. There's no bench clearing. There's no. The stands don't file out over a hard foul.
Maybe there should
and,
be.
And there's just like 10-on-10 fighting each other. That doesn't happen.
I have no way opposed to this.
Oh my goodness.
Enough.
All right, well, let's move on from that. And they had a series this last weekend against Arkansas,
against
number 18
Arkansas.
Team, and got swept. What happened there?
They went to Arkansas. So they went on the road.
Their first real road series.
Their first real road series. Stetson on the road, not exactly treacherous. But they go into Fayetteville, and they get crushed. They got embarrassed. They didn't perform well at all. Pitching was terrible. Alex Pantoliotis, who's been pretty consistent for them, got rocked in his start. He only lasted an inning and a third, gave up 5 runs. Their best chance to win was in today's game, Sunday's game. They lost 4-2, but they committed 6 errors. 6 errors. That's remarkable.
That's
how they only let up 4 runs to me is good job, guys.
And apparently Buddy Monroe, the catcher, who came in the 8th inning, committed 2 on his own. And if he came in the 8th inning, they wouldn't have had to play the bottom of the 9th. So he committed 2 errors in half of an inning.
That's impressive. I mean, and then Mike Mooney, who was brought in as this defensive, like,
wizard.
Specialist. Yeah, wizard, I believe Mike McCall has called him in the past. But this defensive guy, he won all kinds of junior college defensive player of the year awards at Palm Beach Community College. He committed 2 more. Yeah, he's got 5 or 6 on the season. I just don't understand. They've made so many errors. Their infield play is horrendous. It's maybe the biggest problem with this team.
What's the deal with this team, though? I mean, they were impressive against Louisville. Was Louisville overrated, first of all?
They had to have been. But I think more so than overrated, because I don't really know. We haven't seen enough of the season yet, maybe, to make that call. But they shot themselves in the foot, and they did the things that the Gators have been doing in their losses. Louisville came in. Their pitchers couldn't throw strikes. They walked everybody. They made errors. They gave them extra outs. So they were doing the things you can't do when you want to win baseball games that UF's doing now. They're walking guys. They get no bullpen help ever. And the infield just continues to boot balls and throw balls away. You can't win games like that.
All right, moving on. Let's talk real quick about the softball team. They went 8-0 over spring break, won the series at South Carolina, then came back to Gainesville Wednesday and absolutely destroyed Georgia, who is number 8 team in the country. They put up 15 runs in the first game, just completely took them to town. And Georgia had beat the teams that Florida lost to, so that was a really impressive, really, really solid win, a couple of wins for them. And they came back, went out to Oxford, Mississippi, won all three games of that series. Stacey Nelson threw her first career no-hitter today, Sunday, and the team outscored the Rebels 18-0. I mean, this is Stacey Nelson throwing a no-hitter is a huge deal. She's never done that, even in the prolific season she had when you covered her, Kyle.
Like, yeah, last year there was one game in particular where she had a no-hitter broken up by, like, she sawed off a right-handed hitter, and they just popped one up behind Allie Gardner, first base's bloop job, and it ended up, you know, being a one-hitter. After the game, I kind of talked to her about it, you know, what were you thinking and stuff like that. She said something along the lines of, like, I'm never going to get a no-hitter. That's like, she said that, like, I it never happens for me. I'm never going to get one. She has over 20 to 25 one-hitters in her career. I don't know the exact number, but it's something ludicrous. And you could see she was kind of, like, hurt, never really thought it was happening. So, you know, good for her. She finally got one. She's a great pitcher. She deserves it.
The funny thing is I talked to her today for the story, and she said, like, oh, yeah, I always joked, like, I'd never get a no-hitter. It's just not my thing.
Right.
I mean, for her career, it's obviously a huge deal.
And this team as a whole now is really – it really seems to be in the groove. They're the number one team in the country after sweeping Georgia. So,
yeah.
I mean, this team's clearly in midseason form and on a roll.
Yeah, they are completely on. Like, I figured they'd stumble a little bit when Wallace O'Neill went out. Not at all.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me to watch this team play. They did a couple interesting things today. I want to talk to you about this. They put Kelsey Bruder at first base. Put Cisco in right field, DH'd Allie Gardner, maybe just to get her some rest or something. What do you think of that change?
I don't think much of that change. I don't know. Maybe just see what Cisco looks like out there, see if she's another option in case Moultrie doesn't turn out to be an everyday player or whatever the case may be. Just, you know, getting some different people in the lineup. Defensively, I mean, Allie Gardner's great defensively. I think she's a good defensive first baseman. Kelsey Bruder, she's, you know, hasn't played a lot of first base, but I'm sure she'd do fine there. I'd say that's a pretty minor move by Walton. And the kind of stuff that I like to see him do, because in the World Series, me and Defer were commenting on this. When Tiffany DeFelice went down with an injury in, like, the last game or the last two, I think it was the last two games, she couldn't play because she hurt her wrist. She had to have surgery on it, I believe, in the off season, or she had some procedure. Like, it was a big time injury, so she couldn't play. And you could tell Walton didn't know who his next best hitter was. He didn't know if it was Kelsey Bruder. He didn't know if it was Christine Prebe. He didn't know who the next player off the bench should be for them. In the College World Series, you have to test it out against teams like this early in the season. So I think maybe he's learning from his mistakes a little bit last year, and he's doing a good job now.
And it's funny that he said in a press conference earlier this year, like, after the Women's College World Series, he talked to his players, and he basically told them, like, I have such a respect for you guys that I am less likely to move you around, to move you out of your positions. And it's funny to me to see him, like, he really has learned from that. He's completely just changing around the lineups, throwing a lot of different players in a lot of different places. And it's working really well for him so far. So I'll be interested personally to see if he keeps it up going through the rest of the SEC season. But I think that about wraps it up for today's show. So stick around. We'll have another podcast coming up. Oh, hold on. One second, Evan.
Well, there's one team we didn't update from spring break, the Detroit Red Wings. They went 3-1-1 over spring break. They beat the Blue Jackets 4-0 on Sunday. It was a pretty impressive win for them.
If a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound? Because nobody's watching hockey.
I was at the Panthers locker room on Saturday night and talking to David Booth, and he scored 2 goals, but they probably needed a third because they lost 4-3 in the shootout.
With envy. So speaking of things no one will watch, I got my CBI bracket here. Watch out for Nevada. The Wolfpack is coming.
We have another podcast. We'll maybe get into CBI. Probably not. We have another podcast here. You can look it up on our blogs. We have another podcast exclusively about the NCAA tournament and the brackets that came out tonight. That wraps it up for this show. Send any feedback to sports@alligator.org. And thanks for listening.